Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is blues guitarist, singer, and songwriter Albert Castilla. Castilla arrived on the international radar after Buddy Guy's iconic harp blower, Junior Wells, heard the young bluesman sing and invited him into his solo band for several world tours. The gig was a shop window, and though Wells sadly died in 1998, Albert stayed busy joining the great Atlanta vocalist Sandra Hall for national tours in the late 90s while he held his own in onstage jams with artists ranging from the legendary Pine Top Perkins to John Primer. He has been named Best Blues Guitarist by Miami New Times, the respected alternative music magazine, and honored by Roots Music Report with the top blues album of 2011 and 2012. Castilla was born in New York and raised in Miami to an Italian father and Cuban mother, and combines all influences to create his unique style of modern-day blues with a traditional core. After five acclaimed albums and decades of blazing blues rock shows, you might argue that you've already made his acquaintances. But by the Florida bandleader's own admission, Big Dog, his brand-new release, is the first to truly get under his skin. I just wanted to make a record that best represented who I am as a musician, singer, guitarist, and live artist, explains Albert. With every release, I've come close, but this time, producer Mike Zito helped me nail it. He and label boss Thomas Roof wanted me to make a raw, rocking blues record. That's what I'm about. That's who I am. Released in 2016 on Roof Records, Big Dog confirms that Albert is a different breed to the lightweights who dominate the modern music scene. At 46, he slugged his way into contention the old-fashioned way, writing from his heart, bleeding into his performances, eating up the road. I have no illusions about what kind of guitar player and singer I am, he states. My style is raw, unadulterated, and crude and heavy. I don't have the technical proficiency of other players, but I play what's in my heart and what I feel at that moment. When I write songs, they have to mean something. Recorded at Dockside Studios, Louisiana, there's not an ounce of fat on Big Dog's 11 tracks. With Albert darting between self-penned originals, cherished covers, and co-writes with some of his closest compadres, you could smell the mojo in the sweet southern air, reflects Albert, and you could feel the mojo in the recording studio. We had a studio-savvy band with an incredible amount of soul, and Mike's role as producer was the wild card. In 2014, Roof debuted Solid Ground, was declared smoldering and intense by the Blues Magazine. Now Big Dog ups the ante, offering 11 new songs to get your teeth into and supported by a full international tour that promises bark and bite. If you thought you knew Albert Castilla, you don't know the half of it. I think this album is a major game changer for me, he says. No matter what happens after Big Dog's release, I'll always be proud of it. When we tour this album, you can expect a balls-to-the-wall rock and blues show. Expect to get what I've given you, my 100%. It is my great pleasure to welcome blues great and perhaps a legend in the making, Albert Castilla, to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Albert.
That was beautiful, Ray. Can you do my eulogy?
I can. No problem. Hey, why don't I do this for every show?
That's fine with me.
First, I want to thank you for being on the show today. Are you in Miami today?
I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, you're in Lauderdale. I used to live in Lauderdale, in off of Oakland Park Boulevard.
That's where I live. I live off of Oakland Park Boulevard.
You're kidding me.
Yep. No, yep, I sure do. I grew up in Miami.
Right.
And when I met my wife, I told her, I said, you got to move down to Miami. She goes, hell no, I'm not moving down there. You're coming up here. I said, okay. And there's a big difference between Fort Lauderdale and Miami.
Oh, there is.
And it's a little more laid back, although it's, you know, people are migrating north now. So it's getting a little crowded, but it's not quite as bad as Miami is right now in terms of population. I like it a lot.
I really liked Fort Lauderdale when I lived there. I did. I played a lot of racquetball outside. We did. You know, I think it was back in. It was like back in '79, somewhere around there. The disco scene was really heavy, and they had club after club. But you're right. Miami and Lauderdale are totally different. They really are.
But I love it down here because it's on top of being a wonderful place to live. There's a pretty good blues and a root scene down here. So,
yeah, the music.
It's a great place to be right now. It's a great place to be right now.
Yeah. Now your mom is Cuban. My mom is Cuban as well. So
really?
We got a lot in common here. And your dad's Italian. So
yeah. Sicilian. Yeah.
Sicilian dinners at your house must have been awesome, man.
Man, I put black beans in my pasta fazool. You know, that's what I used to do. I used to mix it up a little bit.
That's funny.
It's quite a combination. It makes for hypertension. I think I'm doomed with hypertension because of that mix. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
It's the best food in the world. Yeah, I remember going to Little Havana down there. That they just opened up a Cuban restaurant about 5 minutes from me. I'm here in Bradenton or Sarasota, right in the middle there. And this Cuban restaurant's practically right down the street, and I'm eating there every night.
Is that? Oh, it just opened. Because there was a great place in Bradenton across the street from Ace's, great Cuban restaurant across the street from Ace's Lounge.
Yep,
out there.
Yeah, they used to have Habanero. That was a great Cuban restaurant. They went out of business, but the one on 70 is actually kind of a all the food is out. You just kind of like a buffet type thing, but It's pretty good. The ropa vieja is very, very good. It's excellent.
I'm a pan convite man myself.
Are you?
I am.
And of course, the platanos.
Platano verde, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Maduro. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Well, I'm going to have to come see you at Aces, man. You're going to be down there May 13th in Bradenton. I know you play there quite often.
Yeah, a couple times a year. Great place. Yeah, Renee's really good. Good people.
And you've done a lot of blues fests around the Tampa Bay area as well. I think you did the Bradenton Blues Fest.
I did the Bradenton Festival. I did. I just did the Suncoast Blues Festival in Sarasota.
Right.
And we did the Tampa Bay Festival a couple times in the last couple of years.
Right now, you're on a kind of a rather lengthy tour. I saw all the dates you got planned.
Well, I've been kind of floored. I've been kind of grounded in Florida the last 4 or 5 months, but the heavy touring begins at the end of May. We go out to San Francisco and do a couple of dates out there, and then come back home, and then we just start doing the East Coast and the Midwest. Heavy touring begins in May.
What about internationally? Are you going to go? Because I could imagine. I just talked to Beth Hart, who's a great blues singer.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's very, very popular overseas, probably more so than here in the United States.
I would agree. She's huge over there, yeah.
She's huge. I could imagine you'd be doing the same thing, in Europe and Japan and, places like that.
I'm building it. I'm slowly building it. Yeah, I think I'm going out in November.
Good.
I think you got to run in November, and then I'm doing a tour with Mike Zito and Sugar Ray Rayford and the Manish Boys Rhythm Section doing a handful of dates with them in the beginning of next year. So I'm nipping and picking away at Europe.
Yeah, because they love their blues. They really do.
They do. They're a different kind of audience.
Yep.
But they listen. They are very knowledgeable about the music. I think they know more about the artist than the artists do sometimes. It's a little spooky. They're a little spooky.
I think you're right. Well, what's happened is they're still into the legends of rock and blues, and they appreciate that. And just mainstream radio here in the United States has just gone, you know, the other way. You know,
dance music.
And, yeah, it's terrible. You know, it's taken the artist out. You know, there's no proficient, there's no great guitar players on, mainstream radio anymore. It's just all
no,
crap.
It's crap. It's utter crap. It's utter crap. I try listening to, internet radio and radio stations that have shows and late at night, and I have the satellite, but it's really hard, man. It's really hard to listen to terrestrial radio these days.
It is.
When I do, it's just the sports stations I listen to when I'm even listening to the radio.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm the same. That's all I can listen to, you know. But, you know, what's really cool is you got this cruise coming up, too, in October. And
yes.
It's a legendary rhythm and blues cruise in Puerto Rico.
I know.
And Buddy Guy's headlining that.
I know. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
I love Buddy Guy.
Some of the guys you got Taj Mahal, you got Keb Moe, you got Los Lobos, John Hammond, and there's a ton of groups there, including yourself.
Yeah, I'm gonna try not to be like a goofy fan, but I am. I kind of am. I get starstruck by these guys, and you got to keep cool with that, you know. But I'm really excited as a fan. More so as a musician to be going on it, because I really I love Buddy Guy. Buddy Guy is one of the reasons I'm playing.
Right.
You know, he's one of my biggest influences, and I love Los Lobos. I was on the cruise with them in October 2013, and they're just unbelievable live. I love watching those guys. They actually saved that night. I'm not going to say saved my marriage, but my wife and I, when we were on the cruise, had an argument on the cruise in the middle of the week, and we get up to the cabin, and we're arguing, and I look down at the calendar of events that night, and I see that Los Lobos is going to play in about an hour. So I made up with her on purpose, even though she was wrong. You know, I said, hey, you know, I'm sorry. You know, it was just a big misunderstanding. Let's just forget about it. And she's like crying, you know. No, I don't want to forget about it. I said, no. I'm looking at my watch, and I said, man, 45 minutes to Los Lobos. I better do some smooth talking. So I was like, look, I'm sorry, it was my fault. Let's just go and see Los Lobos. Come on. And finally she agreed, and it turned out to be a great night, you know. Thanks to them.
Funny.
And we're gonna see them again, so I'm really excited.
There you go. Is your wife going on the cruise with you?
She is. She is good.
Going. Yeah.
It's pretty much a requirement. If I go on at something like that, she's gotta go come along, so.
That's right. Is she Cuban as well?
No, she's far from it. She's in Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
She's a Southern girl.
Yeah, I married a Southern girl too.
Where's she from?
Kentucky.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, neighbors.
Yeah. Are they neighbors? Yeah, that's right. They are neighbors.
I think they are.
I think you're right.
she's great. Yeah, she's great to me. She lets me do whatever I want, and so you know. She lets me do this for a living. It's very hard to find somebody that buys into what you're doing as a career like this, you know, like music. So I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, because you're on the road a lot, you know.
I mean, you know, but she's got a hand in it. She helps me out, so she has a stake in it as well. I don't lock her out of the business totally. So.
Talking about Cuba again, I just want to mention you made a song called Little Havana Blues, which is, and you got in parentheses, Arroz con Mango.
Arroz con Mango. That's a Cuban saying for a mess.
For a mess, right?
Yeah. Actually, I wrote that song. It was it's an instrumental. I was watching the Miami Marlins play, and I had the guitar in my hand, and I was strumming, and they were getting really beat down. I couldn't even remember what team it was, but you know, I was strumming this minor chord kind of riff, and that's where I got the idea for the title. And you know, the Marlins Stadium is located smack dab in the middle of Little Havana, so I figured I'd just call it Little Havana Blues. It was inspired by my team, you know.
By your team. Yeah, we got the Rays here, of course, which are doing pretty good. They're not doing bad this year.
They're doing better than last year.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Hey, how about doing a Celia Cruz cover?
I might.
A blues version, you know?
I got to meet her years ago.
Oh, did you really?
Well, I was a kid. You know, my grandmother was a. She used to run a charity organization. It was a cancer. It was a cancer charity.
Right.
Down in Miami, and they used to have these big fundraising telethons, and they used to have it at the Miami High Life Fronton, and they'd have all these dozens of incredible salsa singers and
right
and Latin music stars from back in the 70s and 80s back in the day, and I was a runner. I used to run cart tapes to and from the control from backstage to the control room, because some of the artists would their vocals were canned, you know, and they would just sing along. And
right,
I remember running some carts, and I actually saw her backstage.
Wow.
And she was really nice, really nice lady. I must have been like 14 or 15 years old. My grandmother had me running cart tapes back and forth from the truck to the backstage area, and then but I got to meet her, and she was great. Sweet lady.
It's amazing how many artists I talked to that actually met her, and because I, you know, I talked to Dr. John, you know, he was good friends with Celia Cruz, you know.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that actually met her and actually did a few things with her, kind of, you know.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's a saying where somebody said you shouldn't meet your idols because you'll be disappointed, and I think that's true in a lot of cases, but
right.
But man, she was something else. She was very very nice, kind woman.
Well, it worked out for you with Junior Wells, didn't it?
It sure did.
That's an awesome
story,
man.
He opened the door for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was a social worker. Yeah. I worked for the state of Florida welfare office, and we had a mutual friend, and she introduced me to him, and I sat in with him, did about 5 songs with him, and a couple months later, I wound up moving to Chicago to tour with him. Whole life changed because of that.
Great story.
Whole life changed. I mean, I don't know what would have happened. You know, I'd probably still be slugging it out, playing nights and working days somewhere in an office I hated. You know, so he saved me from a very different life.
I like the story too. When you played with him on stage, you ran down the street. They call your mom, right?
I went to call my parents. It was New Year's.
Yeah.
And I finished playing with them. Yeah, after that first time I jammed with them, and I played it really cool. I walked out, you know, real cool and then when I got outside the bar, I ran up a block and a half to the nearest payphone and called my parents, and they didn't know who he was at the time, but they were happy for me.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, it's frustrating for me because I interview a lot of legendary musicians. You know, I'm you know, probably over 500 now, and
right.
So many of these young people, you know, I get excited. You know, I say, "Why, you know who I talked to the other day? I don't know who that is. I'd never heard of him." You know, it just frustrates me now.
Really?
Yeah, it really does.
We're getting old, Ray. We're getting old.
I guess. But, you know, I knew all my parents, you know, people that they grew up with, you know.
So did I.
Yeah. You know, who were some of the people that your mom and dad listened to?
My dad was a doo-wopper. My dad liked doo-wop music. Yeah, my dad was from the Bronx, and he grew up listening to doo-wop music.
Yep.
So he was a big Dion fan, who I got to meet. I got to meet Dion. He actually came to one of my shows.
Oh,
which
great.
Blew my freaking mind.
Wow.
You know, so it was them and you know, the Ink Spots and stuff like that. The Del Vikings. He was into music like that, but he also was into like mid '60s Motown, you know, stuff from the '60s.
Right.
I grew up listening to a lot of '60s music. The Lovin' Spoonful. He really liked them a lot. And,
how about your mom? Did your mom listen to Celia Cruz and?
No, you know, my mom was into liked country music. Oddly enough.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Cuban woman that like country music. But there's a handful of them down here, down in Miami, that like country music. There's a lot of Cuban people that like country music.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is. Hi, Aaliyah. I got to know a lot of guys like that that like country music.
Well, country's done a little, Yeah, it's a little different now than when we kind of grew up, I guess.
Yeah, you know? Back then it was great. Although I discovered Chris Stapleton for the first time a couple weeks ago, and I think he's amazing. I think he could be the savior of country music.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. Have you ever heard him?
I've never heard him, no.
Oh, he's great. He's amazing. I highly recommend him.
I'm good friends with Janet Robbins. Her father was Marty Robbins.
And, really?
Yeah, I'm going to get her on the show pretty soon.
I love Marty Robbins. My dad was a big Waylon Jennings fan back in the 70s, too.
Yep.
But he turned me on to the Beatles. He turned me on to the Beatles, too. I think the first rock and roll record I remember listening to was the Beatles Live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had an 8-track, and I think that's where I got the first bug with this first. When I got my first taste of loving music for the first time, might have been that record.
You know, it's interesting how you transferred over to blues. You know, you always wonder about how do people start playing blues music. You know, when you grew up, you know, with a variety of different type of music. You know, playing on the radio.
Right.
Who was it that sparked you? Who was it that got you to play the guitar, period? What kind of music got you to play the guitar?
Well, my uncle played.
Uh-huh.
And I first got drawn to it by watching him, and he taught me about three chords, you know, and I kind of learned the rest myself. And we jam a little bit, and he got me into Dylan and Jimi Hendrix. But how I got into blues was I bought a Clapton album. When I was like a sophomore in high school, I bought this Eric Clapton album called Just One Night. It was a double live record.
Right.
And it was recorded at the Budokan in Japan. Yep. And like 80% of the material on the record was blues stuff. And there was a Junior Wells song on there. You know, there was a Bobby Bland, the Otis Rush song, a handful of stuff. And I said, this is really interesting stuff. And I bought a B.B. King album after that. And I'm like, man, it's pretty good stuff, you know. I think I bought the Best of B.B. King, the MCA Best of B.B. King record. And that was cool. And then I bought a Muddy Waters album, and that was it.
That was it.
That's when I knew. I think I was about 16 years old. I was still exploring music and stuff, but at 16, I bought that record. I bought that cassette. It was actually a cassette. And the first thing you hear when you buy that Muddy Waters Hard Again album is Muddy's booming voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared the hell out of me. It was just, I never heard anything like it. Just, you know, it's like, it blew me away. And then the band kicks in, and it was the most raw stuff, it was the freshest stuff I'd ever heard, even though the album was, by then that album was 7 or 8 years old, and that music had been around for years. It was fresher than anything I'd ever heard at the time. And I was growing up in the mid-80s. You know, during rock and roll, you know, where the heavy metal thing was going on and the glam rock thing was going on. And some of that stuff was really watered down. So the blues to me was like a revelation. It was the freshest stuff I'd ever heard, you know.
Well,
and that's what made me want to play blues was that record, that Muddy Waters album.
Besides being a fantastic guitar, I play guitar, a little guitar as well. So, you know, I can feel you. You are a fantastic guitar player. But not only that, you've got a great voice, man. You know, when I first saw you, and I saw you, and I said, well, here's this Cuban guy. I wonder what he's going to sound like, man. You sound like the blues guys from the 60s, you know. The early 60s. You have an awesome voice. And it meshes perfectly with your guitar playing.
Thank you.
And the only guy, and this is coming from the heart, because I've interviewed Eric Burdon a few times.
Oh, wow.
The best cover I've ever heard of House of the Rising Sun is you. I mean, and I mean that. You know,
Thank you.
Hit it right on. I think it was you and I saw a YouTube video of you playing House of the Rising Sun. I think it was at Don O'Dell's. Wow, what a video. People have to go on there and check that out because, you know, it's you know, the way you improvised on that song was incredible.
Yeah, I slowed it down a little bit. I've been playing it for years, and I stopped playing it for a while. And then after Michael Burks passed away,
right?
You know, Michael did an instrumental version of it, and I had just played with Michael Burks a couple months before he passed away, And after he passed, I started playing it as a tribute to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then people started requesting it. And people have been really heavy on requesting it. People have been asking me to record it.
You should.
But I don't know. You think? I mean, I don't know. It's been done so many times. That's the only thing holding me back from really recording it.
Well, you know, I would send it to Eric himself to let him take a look at it. I know Eric's manager. I can even send it to you if you want. And I like
that
to
would
hear
be, that would be that would be great. If he doesn't like it, don't tell me though. Because I'd hate to think that he'd hate that.
I know he'll love it.
I love Eric Bird. Yeah, he's.
He does so many things. You know, he never plays the same song the same way. You know, he adds a little reggae, he adds a little blues, you know, he gets a little different and creative with his hits.
It's great to change things around.
Exactly. That's why I think he's going to love it. You know, he might even invite you over to play with him or something. Who knows?
That would be something else.
Yep.
I would probably do a number in my pants if I get a full call from him asking me to play with him.
Well, here's another guy you should be at least opening for. You know Larry McRae, right?
Yeah, I know Larry.
I know, yeah. I covered Larry here in Sarasota, and it was the John Mayall's 80th birthday, and he opened up for John Mayall, and I covered that show, and I met Larry.
Wow.
Really nice guy. So imagine playing with John Mayall, huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
I love Larry. I've known Larry since I was with Junior Wells. We I hadn't seen him in a while. It's been about 10 years.
He's a good guy. He's a real.
Mayall's Beano record, the one with Clapton, was had a heavy impact on my life.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned Clapton, so I had to mention Mayall. I know you've toured with ZZ Top.
No, actually, I only opened up for him once.
For ZZ Top, okay.
And Sunfest in West Palm.
Who else did you play with?
Man. I'm drawing a blank, man.
I've done shows.
If you could refresh my memory, go ahead.
I know there was another big band that you opened up for, and I can't. I'm like you. I'm drawing a blank for some reason, but I know ZZ Top was one of them. And
man, I've been.
Maybe it'll come to me later.
Me too, man. I don't know. I've done so many gigs and. Played so long, been playing for so long, I just kind of blanked out. I can barely remember what I did. I used to remember every gig I did with Junior Wells. Now I can't remember what I did yesterday.
Well, that's what happens when you get older. You forget the short term memories goes. Usually you keep the long term memory, but the short term
right.
memory is the first thing to go. The another really cool thing that people have to see. Is you performed Hoodoo Man on Roy Buchanan's Telecaster. And how cool was that? I saw Roy play actually back in 74, and he was one of the most underrated, amazing guitar players I've ever seen.
He's freakishly good. Yeah, there's a gentleman down in South Florida by the name of Jesse Finkelstein, and
mm-hmm.
he has a blues podcast or a blues radio station called Blues Radio International, and he's an avid collector of guitars, and I made an appearance on his show, and he had Roy's guitar, one of Roy's guitars, and I got to play with it, and he asked me if I wanted to play it on stage that night. I was playing at the Funky Biscuit in Boca Raton that night,
right.
And he asked me if I want to play it. I go, hell yeah, and I think the strings were original on it, too. I think Roy's... Stank was on them strings. Mm-hmm. Those strings were old as hell and rusty. I probably should have gotten a tetanus shot after I played it, but Roy's fingers were on that fretboard, man, and they were obviously on those strings. So I said, yeah, I'll play it, and I struggled with it. But he had a very heavy. He played heavy gauge strings too, so it was a struggle. But I got through it, and I was really happy that I got to play it.
I tell you, you sounded like Roy, man. I closed my eyes. It was like Roy was playing. And you play a Mean Hey Joe, which, of course, Roy was, you know, pretty famous for playing Hey Joe. I saw him play Hey Joe, and one of his strings broke, and he just kept wailing.
He keeps playing. Yeah, the great ones can keep playing through that.
Yeah. Yep.
And
Amazing. You did a great job with that. I want to talk about the new album, Big Dog, which I loved. I gave it 5 stars, man. I think it's one of your best yet. And
It could be the best one for me. I think it might be the best one I've ever done.
It's an incredible album. Everybody needs to go out and get. Now this, it's not going to be officially released till May 20th. Is that correct?
Correct.
But you can go to Amazon right now and pre-order it. And I know you probably can pre-order it on your website as well, right?
On iTunes as well.
Okay.
And I don't know if I have a I think I'm linked up to Amazon and iTunes. So can go through the website or you can go to them directly.
I did see it on Amazon. It's available now for pre-order.
Cool.
You and Mike Zito seem to make an excellent team. Are you guys going to continue to work together in the future?
Well, I would like to. He's very busy, but I hope he's available for the next one. We're doing some tours together. I'm going to England with him.
Oh, good.
At the end of September, and we're doing a tour together, and then we're touring at the beginning of next year. But in terms of recording, I certainly hope so because he did a great job with the record. I think we're cut out of the same cloth,
right?
Musically, which I think made it really easy for us to work together. He's a blues guy, you know. He has a deep reverence for blues, but he's also a rocker, and I'm the same way. And he knew exactly how to dial in my guitar sound. He dialed it in perfectly. He brought every guitar and amp that he owned to the session. And he said, try this, you know, try that, we'll see what works. And he just got me dialed in, he got my guitar dialed in, and vocally he pushed me to levels I never thought were possible. You know, he just really pushed me on the vocal sense. You know, when we did that Luther Allison song, Drowning at the Bottom, I didn't think I was going to be able to pull it off. Because Luther's a tough guy to cover,
right?
Vocally. Him and Freddie King are the two hardest blues artists to cover because they sing insanely high. Their register is insanely high. So I really pushed. He pushed me really hard, but it paid off. There's quite a few vocal performances on the record that I'm very proud of that I didn't think I had it in me, and he brought it out of me. He really did.
You're right, though. I mean, like the first half of the album, you know, some great jams. You know, but. I think your vocals really shine on this album. You know, your guitar always shines, but your vocals really, really shine on this album.
I believe to my soul it is I think it's the best album vocally. I think the performances were the best ones vocally for me out of all the records. And I'm proud of all the records I've done.
Right.
You know, Prince, the late Prince, you know, may he rest in peace. They asked him what he felt was his best record, mm-hmm. and he said the next one, which I think is the best thing to say about it. I mean, you got to strive to make the next record better, you know. And I loved every record I've done, but I think this one's the best one, and I think the next one I'm going to do is going to be the best one too. Is going to be the best one when it comes out. You know, that's the great way to look at it.
I called Big Dog. I said Big Dog's an exciting, mature, polished gem, and it's an incredible album. Talk a little bit about making the album. What was the process, your thinking, and how did it all come together? I guess.
Well, I wanted from a songwriting standpoint, I wanted to share songwriting duties with people that I knew who were great songwriters. I think that's where I think I might have evolved. On this record as well as in terms of songwriting. And I think it's due to the fact that I had some really very talented friends who could write. Graham Drought out of Miami, great songwriter, has a band called Ico Ico, been around for years, a legend in South Florida. And Cyril Neville, who's an incredible lyricist, a very underrated lyricist. Everybody knows him as the vocalist and the percussionist and the Neville brothers, but I think people don't realize what a great lyricist he was. I mean, he wrote a lot of those great songs that the Nevilles perform that we know. Sister Rosa, he wrote that. He had a hand in a bunch of the Meters songs when he was with the Meters. great songwriter, and to be able to write, I wrote a couple of tunes with him, and one of the songs I was able to put on the record, and that was very Somehow, which I loved. And then I got to write a song with Joel Zoss, who lives in West Palm Beach, who wrote tunes for Bonnie Raitt on her first album.
Mm-hmm.
So I recruited them to help me write some tunes, and that was a big factor in the record success. Hopefully the record success hasn't come out yet, but that was a big difference maker. And we got to record at Dockside Studios in Louisiana, in Maurice, Louisiana, and it happened to be where Junior Wells recorded his last three studio albums.
Really?
So it was very serendipitous. You know, originally we were going to, I think the originally Roof was going to have us record it at Muscle Shoals, which would have been great.
That would have been awesome,
Yeah, but the logistics of it with Zito living in Houston, near Houston, and
Right. And
me being in Florida, logistically it was going to be a little hard to make that work. So Zito calls me and he goes, "Well, what do you think about recording at Dockside Studios?" I go, "What?" And he had no idea about the history behind the connection with me and Junior in the studio. And I said, "Are you kidding me? Yeah, let's do it." And we recorded there. And Junior had told me stories about how great the studio was, mm-hmm. and how magical it was. And it was everything he told me it was, you know. It was just an amazing place to record. They had two Neve recording consoles, which are like the top of the line creme de la creme, mm-hmm. as far as sound consoles go. It's the best, you know. It's the best, you know.
Right.
And it was just a great experience, you know. I used Mike Zito's band, The Wheel,
mm-hmm.
and they were tremendous. And Johnny Sansone played harmonica on two tracks. I mean, it just went really well. You couldn't ask for a better session.
Got some awesome tracks on there. "Let the Big Dog Eat" is just a fun song, you know.
And Zito had the same vision I had for the record, to just make a raw,
right,
bluesy blues rock record. You know, we were channeling. The three heroes of mine that we channeled the most were I think, Buddy Guy, Luther Allison, and Johnny Winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they were with me in that studio. I felt them with me there, you know.
I think you're right. Yeah, the great Johnny Winter. Yeah. I interviewed Johnny. Yep. As a matter of fact, I interviewed Edgar Winter, and then the next day Johnny died. So it
was
kinda
weird. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Johnny was great. Johnny, I got to talk to Johnny mm-hmm. a couple months before he passed away, and it was like the best conversation about music I'd ever had with anybody. You know, he was so lucid, you know, and people had told me stories about he could barely talk a few years back. And
right.
Paul Nelson had really got him on track, you know, and it was really good to see him, you know, back to form. That night that we opened for him, that's the biggie that we opened for him, Johnny Winter.
I knew it would come.
Johnny
back.
Winter. Yeah, it came to me, Johnny Winter, in Melbourne, Florida, and it was he was on fire that night,
because
it was raining. It was raining really hard, and the rain was getting on his gear, and he was really pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And but it lit a fire under his butt, and he just played incredible. I thought, you know, I was in the portal when he broke into Mean Town Blues, mm-hmm. and it sounded just like he sounded like old Johnny, man.
Yeah,
he played, you know. So it was great to see him back to form, you know, before he died.
He was a hard-working guy, man. He always had gigs, you know, all year round, which I found it amazing. You know, he was one of the hardest working guys in show business for sure.
Yeah. Well, I asked Paul about that. I asked Paul Nelson about that. I said, "Man, he was sure working a lot?
Yeah.
Is that going to hurt him?" He goes, "Are you kidding me? His doctor said he needed to keep working because that's what keeps him alive. If he stops, and that's very true. You know, when you take if you were to take something that meant something to you away from you at that age, you would surely die.
Yeah.
You know, it happens to people in sports. It happens
right.
to people in life. My dad was out of work for 3 years, and he was so miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And then he found another job, and then he's, you know, he's back to normal again.
But, right, right.
You know, it's that's how it is, and that's how he was. He loved being on the road.
That's what kept him going, for sure.
Yeah, it sure did.
Yeah, I brought up the old myth, you know, about making a deal with the devil, you know, with the blues and stuff like that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I brought it up with Johnny. I said, you didn't make any kind of deals or anything, did you, Johnny? He said,
hell no, I'm a good Christian. I believe in Jesus.
So we can put that to rest, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice myth.
Yeah, I don't
but
think
it's
even Robert Johnson.
Works.
I don't think it happened with Robert Johnson either. His family's kind of upset about that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting myth, but it actually there's a lot of hard work involved in this business.
Oh yeah, I think some reporters started that many years ago or something. You know, to make a headline. Back to the album, you know, some people compared your voice, and I can see it in certain songs, but not all the songs at all. Because
mm-hmm.
to me, your voice is very unique. But they compare, like, in Somehow, I did hear a little Van Morrison. And I know
wow.
some people have compared some of your vocals to Van Morrison. But I did hear it in Somehow, and it was great. That's a nice...
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't understand that comparison either. He's
totally you know. Different,
but I love Van Morrison. I grew up listening to him, but I don't think I sound like Van Morrison.
No. Maybe when he did some of the slower tracks, like, you know.
Maybe I do play Tupelo Honey on my live shows every once in a while.
Really?
So maybe that might have been where it came from. But I don't think I'm in the same league with him anyway. He's just something else.
It's cool how you the different contrast, you know, with the blues, and then you get into Let's Make Loving in the Morning, which is different. You know, it's almost kind of a, I don't know, I want to say a little bit of an Allman Brothers feel.
I've never done a record like that before.
Yeah.
You know, I had the riff laid down, but I didn't have lyrics, and that's where Joel Zoss came in, and he gave me the the lyrics, and we were able to build a real nice tune out of it, and It's very interesting because it's not really what I do. I mean, that's the thing I was talking about how Zito pushed me.
Mm-hmm.
He really got me out of my comfort zone vocally. He really pushed me. When I sent him the demos to that song, I was kind of singing really low. I didn't really push my vocals up to the... And he really pushed me to get up them high notes on that tune. It's very Almondsy, yeah. It's very Tedeschi Trucks.
Right.
It felt very Tedeschi Trucks to me when we were done recording it. And that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing to me.
That's a great thing. That's why I like the contrast, because you can do a blues album and play a lot of, you know, a lot of the same licks and, you know, and play a lot of things that a lot of everybody else is doing. But when you can make that contrast into different sounds and different ways, like you did on that song, that's what makes a great album.
I think that's why I love the record so much. It's very, the material is it's slightly different than what I've been normally putting out, you know. And I feel it's very rewarding to know that I'm a little more versatile than I thought I was, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool how you found that out. And I guess it took Mike to get it out of
you. Exactly. It took Mike to get it out of me.
Yeah. That's awesome. Sometimes you need that, you know, somebody looking in, somebody on the outside, I guess.
But we get along so well, you know. We've known each other for about 8 years, 8 or 9 years, and we feel we could tell each other anything. And if he felt, you know, whenever he wasn't afraid to ask me to do things that might have been outside of my comfort zone, and I was all cool with it, you know.
Well, the album is great. Everyone needs to get this. You can pre-order it now. The tracks on this album, Let the Big Dog Eat, one of my favorite. It's just fun music. And don't let them fool you. Another great jam on that. Get Your Ass in the Van, which is awesome. Did you write that song?
I did.
Yeah.
I wrote that song in 5 minutes.
Really?
I think I was reading. I think I read one too many whiny ass Facebook posts from somebody on some young musician. I don't remember. This was like back in last December.
Yep.
And I heard somebody complaining about something, and I just kind of, and I went, I'm going to have to give this man credit. I went up to this bar in Boynton Beach to see a band play, and Chris Peak from J.P. Soares' band was there hanging out, the drummer for J.P. Soares. And we were talking about something. I said, oh, I just read this post. It just made me really mad. And these guys complaining. They ain't done nothing yet, and they're complaining about what they don't have, and they should be paying their dues. And then Chris said, yeah, he just needs to get the van. And I said, wait a minute. He didn't say ass, though. And I said, wait a minute. I got this idea. And I went home. I got home from the gig, and I wrote the song in probably about 5 minutes.
That's
the lyrics just kind of flowed. And by the time I got to the studio, I polished it up a little bit. And voila, that's how it came about.
Great tune.
This life is a wonderful life, but it's a hard life.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
The sooner you come to terms that, you know, that the blues business ain't an American Idol episode,
right,
and that you got to work for your stuff, you know, you can't,
right,
you're not going to be famous in 6 weeks,
mm-hmm,
you know, the happier you'll be, you know. But the journey to wherever you're going is a lot of fun. You know, the work is fun. What we do is fun,
mm-hmm,
you know. So I enjoy the hard work, and I enjoy traveling, and I enjoy touring, and it's hard sometimes, and you just got to deal with it. And some people don't deal with it very well.
Yeah.
And I get tired of hearing it on Facebook.
Yeah, a lot of people whining, right?
Oh, they whine. Yeah, it's a tool for whiners. It's become a tool for whiners.
Right.
You know, post puppy dogs and stuff. I don't want to hear your crap.
Just do it. Get out on the road. Get your ass in the van, man.
That's it. Get your ass in the van. That's all.
I love it. You know, another song you did. Now, this isn't on the album, but I was amazed when I heard it. And again, it's your take on the cover is Black Magic Woman, which is, I think that's when you played with J.P. Soares. You did a magnificent job on Black Magic Woman. That was so awesome.
I think that was, a lot of that was due to J.P. He's something else. That was a fun jam. That was a fun little jam we had.
Incredible.
I think somebody requested it. I don't play that song too often, and my mother loves it.
Yeah, it's
loves
in your blood, man.
What's that?
It's in your blood. You got to play it.
Sure, but I try not to, because there's a lot of people that do great versions of it, and
right,
I just kind of reluctant to play it. But my mom always requests it, and so I did it a few times for my mom, and then somebody showed up at that show in Boca, knew I did it, and requested it, and I didn't really want to, but
right,
I thought it would be a good opportunity to bring J.P. Soares up to jam with me on it. He's so good at phrasing, and his phrasing on Latin type music is just really, he's really amazing. So it was one of my favorite nights of playing that was when J.P. got up there and played with me on it.
You did a great job on that tune. I was
excited
to see, too, the original Santana band. Most of them are getting back together, and they've got a new album out called Santana 4.
I know. I haven't bought it yet.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Have you heard it yet?
I've heard a lot of it's on YouTube already. And it's a really good album. I talked to Greg Rowley before. I know he's excited about it.
Is Michael Shreve on it, too?
Yes. Michael's on it.
Wow.
Yep. Michael's on it. Let's see, who else is on there? Neil Sean is on it.
Wow.
Yeah. Who is on
the original lineup.
As well. Yeah.
Wow. I hope they come to town.
We're running out of time here, but I wanted to ask you, this is a question I ask everybody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie Field of Dreams, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? They can be long gone, you know?
Muddy Waters.
Muddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Muddy Waters. Muddy Waters. And is Muddy Waters, can I mention his band? I mean,
yeah.
Muddy Waters, sure, Muddy Waters and his band, and his and Muddy Waters with Muddy Waters, Fuzz Jones, man, Willie Big Eyes Smith, Jimmy Rogers. I mean, I would Muddy Waters and any of the guys in his band. I would love to play with Muddy Waters. Yeah, that would have been my field of dreams. Is it just restricted to one person?
No.
How many people am I allowed?
You can pick a whole band if you want.
Well, it would have to be, you know, it'd have to be Muddy Waters, you know, Howlin' Wolf, Michael Bloomfield.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton.
Yeah.
There's still guys alive that I would still love to play with. I mean, Buddy Guy is one of them, and Clapton. Mm-hmm. Luther Allison certainly would be in my field of dreams, and Johnny Winter.
Because
although I opened for him, I didn't get to play with him.
That's a shame.
That would be just a total blast to play with those guys.
All those
guys I mentioned would be my field of dreams.
Are you a fan of Joe Bonamassa?
I appreciate what he does. I like what he does.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a great artist. I think he's a great guitar player.
Yeah, he's gotten to do a lot with Beth Hart.
I know.
Yeah.
They've done quite a bit together.
I like to see you and Beth Hart together.
I think he's an amazing musician.
He's good. Well, that's a good answer. That's a good Field of Dreams wish.
Man. I mean, there's so many, but Muddy would have to be the first. You know, because he was the one that it was his record that got me into playing blues. So it would be, and Johnny produced the album that got me into playing blues. So it would have to be Muddy and Johnny and Luther Allison and Howlin' Wolf would be those guys.
Yeah, Johnny got Muddy back in the limelight again.
He sure did.
Yeah.
He told me that was one of like the highlights of his life was making that first album with him.
Exactly. Yep. Well, you have anything else you like to promote? You got the new album coming out. And
I have a hot sauce that I'm going to be. No, actually, I'm not. I'm
like Johnny Winter, right? Johnny Winter's hot sauce.
He actually gave me a bottle of hot sauce too.
It wasn't as hot
as I thought it would be, but it was hot. But it wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking to somebody who had a bad experience with ghost peppers. So, I mean, so nothing could ever be as hot as a ghost pepper.
Mm. But you know, a lot of people.
I loved it.
A lot of people think they're under the illusion that Cuban food is spicy, and I keep telling them, no, you know, we're not the spicy guys.
No,
you know, we really aren't.
No, we're not the spicy people.
No, we just have the good
food. We are spicy people.
Yep.
But our food isn't very spicy. No, you're right.
Yep. So how are things down in Lauderdale? If I went back there now, I probably wouldn't even recognize it.
Probably not. But it's wonderful. I got a nice life down here. I got two dogs that nag me. I locked them out of my office so I could do this interview. They probably did a number in the hallway, but that's okay.
I love it.
It's sunny and 80. It's sunny and 83 degrees.
83, yeah, it's about like that here too. I did two interviews with dogs barking in the background. I did a live interview. I mean, I went to, you know, Joe Lala. Joe was, you know, he was in Blues Image, you know,
yeah.
And he's from the Tampa area. He just passed away recently, but he had his two dogs while I was doing the interview, and they were barking all the way through the interview, and I did. Let's see, who was it I did also? I forgot. But he was talking to me on the beach with his dogs, and his dogs were going nuts as well. So I'm pretty used to it.
I love my dogs, man. They keep me sane, you know. They keep me sane. You know, the process of making music is wonderful.
Yeah.
But the business end of it sucks.
I know.
At times. And it can be maddening. You know, there's a lot of slammed doors, and there's a lot of hurt
yep.
feelings involved, and there could, you know, a lot of obstacles, and you know, when you got your family around and you got your dogs, you know, it makes things easier. It makes makes the business end of it a lot bearable, you know, a lot more bearable.
Well, you've had
I'm lucky to have my dog.
You've had perseverance. You've done a fantastic job. You don't stop, and there's no doubt in my mind you're going to hit it big, in the big time one day. And
thanks, Ray.
You'll be
I hope it happens soon. I ain't getting no younger, man.
I know. Well, you know, the Blues players can be 85.
Yeah, that's true. And hit their prime. That's very true.
That's right. Look at John Mayall. He's like 81, 82 now. And he's still, you know, he still sets up his equipment on stage.
Yeah.
At that age. So, well, let me, you got a long way to go, man.
You know, people tell me, we're going to get a big old bus. You should get a big old bus. I said, man, if I'm ever in my 80s, I'd probably still have a 15-passenger van, and I'd probably still carry my own crap. You know, it's just it's the life I've known most of my life. You know, I don't know if I could get used to being in a big old tour bus.
Right.
Well, I guess I could adjust to it. I'd adjust,
yeah,
but
I think you would.
But I'm never going to stop doing it, no matter how. You know, if I never get as far as I should or I want to, I mean, I'm still going to be doing this. I just absolutely love it. It's the only thing I really can do, and I just love doing it, you know. My love for it is very deep.
Albert, I want to thank you so much, man, for being on the show today and for giving us all this incredible music and all the music you've given us and continue to bring. And listen, good luck
Thanks,
on the
Ray.
Tour. It's a long tour. Take some breaks, but
Thanks,
have fun.
Ray.
Have fun. That's
great,
the main thing.
Thanks, sir. I had a great conversation. It was a great conversation. Thank you, man.
I'll follow up with you. We'll get you on the show, you know, a little bit later after the tour and maybe the next album.
I'm playing it. I'm playing in Inglewood tomorrow. That's not too far from you.
I'll probably see you in Bradenton when you come. Yeah.
All right. I'll see you in a couple of weeks then.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right, brother. Thanks, Ray.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
You can pre-order Albert Castilla's latest release, Big Dog, at Amazon.com or on his official website, http://albertcastilla.net. Also, be sure to visit Albert Castilla's website at http://albertcastilla.net for current tour information. Albert's got a Twitter, https://twitter.com, Albert Castilla, and also his Facebook at https://albertcastilla.net. www.facebook.com/Albert Castilla Band. And coming up next on the Ray Shasho Show, we hope to have Fee Waybill, the legendary frontman for the Tubes. And be sure to join me bi-weekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Ray Shasho Show. Very special thanks to Jill Kettles at Miss Jill PR for hooking us up today with Albert Castilla, and especially the great team of Don and Doug Newsome with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on the Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.